You may ask, how did this tradition get started? I'll tell you. I don't know.
But it's a tradition. And because of our traditions, every one of us knows who he is and what God expects him to do.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk Torah. I am Rabbi Tzvi Jacobson with the NRM Streamcast, and we'll spend our time talking Torah, learning stuff, and having fun while we learn. You can always send your questions and comments to our mailbag at letstalktorah@gmail.com. And, of course, I will answer as many questions as I can. Or you can go to our webpage, letstalktorah.net. That's Let's Talk Torah, no apostrophes, letstalktorah.net. We have the archives. Find the old shows, find the new shows, leave questions, leave comments, and of course the all-important donate button to make sure we can continue doing what we're doing. And your help, of course, is always appreciated. Just pick any of those levels that work for you. And if you'd like a shout-out, you want an anonymous, you want a happy birthday, you want a happy anniversary, anything that works for you, of course, works for us. And as always, I thank you in advance. The weather is unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. I think we had 2 days of over 70-degree weather. For the middle of March, that's pretty nice. I can handle that here in Michigan. Okay, now it's raining outside, but it's not like Denver where it's like 3 feet of snow or something. So, spring, I think we can officially, even though it's Michigan, you shouldn't be allowed to say anything, but I think we can say spring is here. We are getting ready. I see the trees already are starting to bud, which means if we get a freeze, that will be bad. But trees are starting to bud. The spring is coming. Warm weather. Change the clocks. Children outside playing ball. It is really all quite amazing. So I wanted to talk about these last Torah portions that discuss the tabernacle, the building of the tabernacle, the accounting of the tabernacle, the actual putting it together by Bezalel and Aliyev. So in Vayakel and Pekudei, the overwhelming Torah portion is really discussing the actual collecting and the actual building of the tabernacle, except for the first couple verses in the Torah portion, and that is it talks about the Sabbath. So simple, we talk about Sabbath and the Ten Commandments. Like, why here all of a sudden are we talking about the Sabbath? There's a lot of stuff to learn. I would like to spend some time talking about the beauty of Sabbath. Sometimes we're so busy talking about what I can't do. Sorry about my cough. We got to talk about what I could do. What's in it for me? What's my benefit? What's my gain? Why do I care? But before we get there, we got to take care of the don'ts. And I think if we get those out of the way, it'll make the rest of the concept of what we're looking at just more understandable. So first of all, there's the juxtaposition, putting the Sabbath. Moses gathers everybody and teaches them about Sabbath. Not so many details, by the way. Just you got to keep Sabbath, can't work on the Sabbath. We don't even know what work means. And then we start talking about the building of the tabernacle again. So the first lesson for us is that as important and as necessary and as dear and beloved the tabernacle, the Mishkan is, that's where God will bring down his presence. We're going to talk about that, how God fits. Why does God want to fit? All those things we're going to try to get into. As important as that is, right? The Jewish nation recently did the golden calf, and we lost God's presence, and we want God's presence back. And the only way to get God's presence back is by building this Mishkan tabernacle. Still, it does not supersede the Sabbath. Sabbath comes, no building, no construction, no nothing. Go home, hang out with your family, which I think is one of the lessons that we really want to get into today. We're very good at, people tell me all the time, I know what God really wants. Me and God, we are tight. And I know exactly what God wants me to do. And God wants me to build a synagogue on the Sabbath. God wants me to work on Sabbath so that I can take care of this charity. Or God wants me to go collect and raise money on the Sabbath. Trust me, I've heard it all. And that is exactly what the Torah is telling me by placing Sabbath right next to the tabernacle, to tell me that I don't get to decide what God wants, right? A lot of times we think that we know if I could communicate with God back and forth, I would tell him, he would understand where I'm coming from. And the answer to that is no. That no matter how important something may seem, and how important to the Jewish world, or the world in general, how important something is, and therefore I get a free pass, and therefore I'm allowed to go ahead and not keep Sabbath. With all that being said, God says it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. Keep Sabbath. Aye, what about saving the world? You'll have to save the world after Sabbath. But on the Sabbath, you're not saving the world. So that's really the first lesson we have to take away. The next lesson is more of a just to give us an overall picture. And I think sometimes we don't just take the time to sit back and realize it's not so difficult to figure it out. And that is what is permitted on the Sabbath, what is not permitted on Sabbath. So we know the Torah says you can't work. What does work mean? Well, I know what work means. Sitting by a computer? How hard could that be, right? Moving furniture? That sounds hard, right? I don't know. What's work? So in general, to try to make people get a picture, we say it's creative work. But the truth is, you can really break down all the different things that the Torah says you can't do on Sabbath to four categories. And as the juxtaposition is telling me, what was necessary in the building of the Mishkan is what you can't do. But there's a way to make it very easy to remember. There's basically four categories. Making bread, or perhaps creating dyes. It's really the same thing. Creating a wool curtain. Creating a leather covering. And building a building. And what we'll go through, you'll see it's very simple. Right? You just get the whole list. Now, the details and the ramifications on and how each of these categories work, we can figure out. And we can show when it applies, when it doesn't apply. That's already, you got to start getting to the Talmud. But to give the average person a good feeling of what you could or can't do boils down to these four categories. So, for example, what does it take to make a loaf of bread? Well, you got to plow the field. You got to plant the field. You got to harvest the field, right? Whatever goes into the process of harvesting. After I harvest, for those who don't know, that's when I'm actually cutting. Right now, we don't have machines. But that would be with the actual cutting the stalk of grain, separating it from the ground. You got to gather the grain. You got to thresh, for those again who don't know what threshing is. In those days, they would have animals, or they would have the animals pull like stones over over the wheat stalk, and it would separate the kernels from the stalk and from the chaff. So that's the threshing. Then you're going to winnow. You're going to take your pitchfork. You're going to throw the stalks into the air, and the wind will blow away the stalks, and down will come down the kernels. Then there's separating. Now, winnowing and separating are actually quite similar. But again, you want to get the pebbles and the dirt out, separated from the wheat kernels or barley kernels or rye kernels or whatever we're referring to. We're just about making bread. You're going to grind the kernel. You're going to sift it, which again becomes another kind of separating. We are then going to knead. We're going to add water and create a dough. We are then going to bake the dough into bread, or baking and cooking is all the same. And there you have, I believe, 10 categories right off the top. All right, we're going to see some categories could be they go back and forth, but you basically have 10. So right there, we gave you 10 types of 10 categories of things you can't do on the Sabbath, and they all are involved in the baking of a loaf of bread. Next, making a wool curtain. Now, some of these things are for people that are into sewing or into weaving. So again, here you go to the Henry Ford Museum or Greenfield Village. You want to see what a loom looks like. You know, it's a lot of the process of wool is in the setting up of the loom. And again, we don't, for the most part, we don't even live that way, right? You don't even know what I'm talking about. So here we go. You got to shear the wool off the sheep. You got to whiten, right? Cleaning, right? You got to whiten the wool. Again, a lot of these things will apply in multiple cases, but I'm just trying to give you just a feeling. So you can't do laundry, right? You can't comb the wool. You cannot dye, so coloring, right? You can't dye the wool. Then there was the spinning and the warping and the setting up of the loom and the weaving and the unraveling, tying and untying, permanent knots, sewing, we all get sewing. And the final one is it's actually tearing, that sometimes if the material is not perfectly smooth, you have to tear it and re-sew it. A lot of these things, most of these are not going to apply in a modern world, but some of them apply very much. Okay, so we've now gone through the second set of categories of what you can't do on the Sabbath, and they're all connected to making a woolen curtain. Next, there was a leather covering. So for hunters, this is very relevant, right? You can't trap, you can't slaughter or kill an animal, can't skin the animal, can't tan the leather, you can't smooth out the leather, like getting off the hair and smoothing it out, and this has other ramifications. We don't make the lines to cut it how we would want to cut it, and measured cutting is also a problem. And last but not least, and perhaps these are the ones that people will find more common, right? I'm just trying to give us an overview of what the Torah is saying you can't do on the Sabbath. I know it's saying a lot of things you can't do, but I want to point out when we're done, it's not an exhaustive list, right? It's not crazy, okay? So the last thing is the building of the tabernacle, or for the most part, making the wooden beams. So you can't write, and as they would write on the beams, when you would build the beams, when you build anything, right? A lot of times you make marks so you know what fits together. So you can't write, can't erase, can't build, can't demolish. What's called the final hammer blow when you're creating something, creating a fire, extinguishing a fire, and then they had to transport the tabernacle, so carrying in a public domain also becomes an issue. Okay. That, for the most part, that's it. That's it. But I think what we need to focus on is the positive part of Sabbath. Sometimes we look at the Torah and we say it's a bunch of rules and regulations of what I can't do. You always tell me I can't do this, you always tell me I can't do that. It's true that there are rules and regulations. But the rules and regulations are to help us focus on what the Sabbath is all about. In other words, if I figure out all the stuff that I shouldn't be doing, what does that leave me with? It leaves me with the beautiful experience of a Sabbath. The concept of eating with your children. The concept of sitting around the table and having nowhere to go and nothing to do. And my children want to sing, we sing. They want to talk about the Torah portion, talk about the Torah portion. Want to make fun of teachers in school, make fun of teachers in school. Want to ask riddles, want to tell me stories. Just hang out. Some people have no idea. They can't hang out. They have to have a phone in front of them. They don't communicate with people anymore. No phones, no computers, no email, no telephone ringing, no newspapers, no nothing. I am sitting by my table, of course, enjoying my chicken soup, or a gefilte fish, or a nice piece of chicken, right? Depends what you like. Maybe some potato kugel, right? We're sitting around as a family, right? This is your opportunity. Any concept, any topic, you're allowed to have a family conversation while everyone's paying attention, or not. They want to go away from the table. They want to relax. They want to chill. They want to sit on the couch. It's a beautiful, warm, fuzzy environment where you could be a person. You're not part of the world anymore. I close my door. I don't care what's happening in the world. I do owe somebody money. I don't owe somebody money. I have stuff to do. I have projects I'm working on. I have to raise money. But you can't do it on the Sabbath. You can't do anything. So all I can do is live like a person. I can actually live without the thought, worry about what's happening tomorrow. I'm just living in the present. I am enjoying it. Is family time. You want to play games. You want to take a walk. You can't. It's real people time, which nowadays we get so far removed from actually conversation. I had conferences last night, so I told one of the parents, yeah, third graders, but this child happens to love conversation. Very smart boy, deep thinker. He's enjoyable to have a conversation with. I told the mother, I said, I imagine by your Sabbath table, he's very entertaining. He wants to have a conversation, right? You know, whenever we walk into an elevator, nobody wants to have a conversation. They're all looking down at their phone. They want me to look at the top of their head. Everyone's afraid of a conversation. Everyone is so busy that we don't talk to people, which is terrible, right? It's just the world changed. Great. So the world changed. We're all on our phones, and AI is going to do all our talking for us, and I guess there's going to be AI conversations back and forth between two different companies, and people are going to be sitting back, and I don't know what they're doing, right? But we don't have conversations. The Sabbath is the beauty of learning to be around people and living with people. It's a beautiful, amazing time. So I was studying before with a friend, and he says to me, we're studying these Torah portions. He says, Rabbi, says, you know, the tabernacle was very, like, he's figuring these things out, was very temporary. For 40 years in the desert, like, first he says to me, so, okay, so the tabernacle is located by, on the Temple Mount? I said, no. The tabernacle is only when we travel in the desert. For the 40 years we're going to be in the desert, we're going to travel with this moving synagogue, is how he wanted to put it. And that's it. And then afterwards, we're going to get into the land of Israel, and we're gonna build a more permanent structure. So why all these Torah portions for something very, very temporary? Like, it doesn't even make sense. So, and furthermore, I told him to think about that God fills the heavens. The heavens is who knows how big. And we're building, the tabernacle is not a very big building. The courtyard of the tabernacle is approximately 200 feet by 100 feet. That's it. It's not even a football field. That's it. That's the whole building. God's presence can fit in that building. What's going on? So I happen to have seen a cute thought. That's not the main answer, but I'm going to say my answer first. Then if I have time, I'll get to the cute thought. I said, the answer's like this. God needs to teach us. And that's why it gets repeated. This, the Mishkan, the tabernacle, is repeated 5 times. Why is the tabernacle repeated 5 times? Because of this most important lesson. And the lesson is that if we make a little space for God, God's coming. You make space for God, you do not have to have the most majestic temple synagogue for God to show up. You can have a little room, quorum of people coming to pray, and God's there. Because God doesn't need magnificent structures. God needs that we make a little space. And when we make that little space, God's presence is there. And I think that's an amazing lesson. Right? That's why all these Torah portions, if you think about it, and you look and you see the details of the Mishkan with all the measurements and all the sizes and over, you realize it's not very big. Because God says, I don't need it big. I don't need it humongous. I don't need it magnificent. I don't need you to spend every last penny that you can find to make a space for me. But you got to make the space, right? I got to say, okay, God, I'm ready for you. Here I am. Here's where you're going to hang out. That's what God wants, and that's what we need. That's the better answer. But the second answer I saw just interesting. There was a guy, working guy, and he worked for the government, and he, you know, finagled around, and they gave him a bridge to collect tolls. That's how he was going to make money. And he hired 2 people to collect the tolls on the different sides of the bridge. And one day a guy comes to him, poor guy, he says, I need a job, please, please, I need a job. I'll do anything. You got to help me out. And must have been a relative. So he said, poor guy, he says, okay, you know, I don't think my toll collectors are doing that great of a job. Anyways, why don't you take over one of the toll collectors? Anyways, a week later, this new worker comes with just like a humongous amount of cash, like 100 times more than the other toll collectors. He said, what's going on? Like, how could it be? It's the same bridge. Why are you making so much money? So he investigated and he realized that the other 2 toll collectors were friendly people and people would talk to them and come and schmooze with them. And okay, you know, you don't have to pay the toll. Just pay $1. Just don't worry about it, you know. You come by often enough, we'll figure it out next time. So everybody schmoozed with them and they let everybody go for free and they weren't making any money. This new worker, he didn't do shtick, no shtick. He just did what he was told to do. And doing what he was told to do, he managed to make for himself or for his employer a lot of money. And sometimes that is also the attitude we have to have, right? How could God's presence fit here? There's no way. It's impossible. How could, if we go ahead and we just build this ark and we make this table and we make this menorah and we make these curtains, well, why would God's presence be here? So the answer is because why is the wrong question. The question is not why. It's because God said, no questions, do what you're told, collect the tolls, you're going to make a ton of money. Start asking questions. Start making your own calculations, your own thoughts, your own I don't know what, and all of a sudden you didn't make any money. No shtick. That's the bottom line. So there is a music playing, so I will not get to that story. The music's playing. I hope you enjoyed it. Short and sweet. Thank you, of course, to all our wonderful sponsor and listeners. You know I can't do it without you. Thank you to our wonderful production team. We have Alan in the back today. I have left you with some food for thought. Until next time. I am Rabbi Tzvi Jacobson. You've been listening to Let's Talk Torah on NRM Streamcast. Until next time, don't forget to think about it. There were 1,000,000 dreams for the world we're gonna make.
There's a house we